its morning stars become dark, and wait for daylight in vain, and not see the first rays of dawn, for it did not shut the doors of the womb on me to hide trouble from my eyes. Why did I not perish at birth and die as I came from the womb? Why were there knees to receive me and breasts that I might be nursed? For now I'd be lying down in peace, I'd be asleep in a rest of the kings and rulers of the earth who built for themselves paths. they endure till the end and they live. That's the happy ending. They don't die. That's the story of Job. It can be easy to think, well, what's the purpose of a story like this? Like, what, why would this book be in the Bible? Why would that movie be in the theater? Oh, you guys saw it, right? Why would you go and see this movie? And I think the only reason those movies exist is not because they entertain us, really. Those movies exist because when we watch someone face terrible adversity and persevere, it does something to us. And not the same way that, like, happy ending and everyone's singing and dancing does something to us. It doesn't give us joy. But it inspires us in something. And we see the tenacity of the human spirit. We see the depths of someone's resolve. We see the recesses of what faith can do, and we see that he survives. We think, if I go through something like that, maybe I can survive too. God, help me become someone who can survive something like this, because your word says it's possible. It equips us with a mentality that no matter how dark it gets, we can keep going forward. Job is a suffering and survive story. I think it's worth noting that when we look at those two words after this, it's not like just a story about some normal guy who goes through a hard time, right? The book of Job, it is about the godliest man on the face of the earth who goes through a hard time. And we see in chapter 1 that this prayer is not just after he suffers, but this prayer is also after God himself calls Job the godliest man on the face of the earth. After this, Job prays his prayer. This prayer comes after God handpicks Job where Satan is looking for someone to devour. And God says, try Job, test my servant Job. He will not fail. After that, he prays this prayer. After Job experiences all that garbage and his wife tells him, curse God and die. After this, Job prays this prayer. After Job spends 7 days, the godliest man on the earth, experiencing the deepest pain, goes through 7 days of just sitting there in silence and thinking about what his prayer will sound like. After 7 days of reflection, he finally opens his mouth and pens these words. And so when we read this prayer, it's like God is trying to tell us that if you want to know what the godliest person in the world would say after reflecting on the most intense suffering imaginable, here's the wisest thing that someone could say, the godliest thing that someone could say. This is what the soul says in a moment like that. Expect the godliest person on earth to say in a moment. And if you didn't know what was coming next, and the Sunday school or got a little discussion, and someone said, hey, well, what would a godly person say if they suffered? And you probably would say something like, you'd probably say, well, I trust God has a plan in all this. All things. How did I forget this? Like, most famous verse in the Bible. Somebody tell me the most famous verse in the book of Romans. If those who love him are called according to his purpose. I keep thinking he who promised his grace. Thank you. He works all things together for the good of those who love him who are called according to his purpose. Right? Oh, yes. Right? We're getting something from Job. Though he slay me, still I will praise him. Right? It's a kind of happy thing. Like, oh, it's all good. I trust God. I just trust in the Lord here, right? Yeah, this has been hard, but you know what? Jesus is better, right? Something like that. That sounds really nice and upbeat. That's not what Job says. Job says, it says that Job opened the book of his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. If you're having a Sunday school book discussion, and somebody said, hey, what do you think a godly person would say when they suffer? I bet you wouldn't say, they probably cursed the day they were born. Does it feel like godly people are supposed to curse the day they were born? In a sense, this is a metaphor. Curses the day he was born. Like, that was a terrible day. But in another sense, as you read this prayer, you see that Job is literally cursing the day he was born. Like, when Jesus curses the fig tree, he says, may no one ever eat from you again, right? And the fig tree withers. That's the language Job uses, cursing language, to talk about his birthday that happened. He says, may the day of my birth perish. May gloom out of darkness creep once more. May a cloud settle over it. May blackness overwhelm it. May thick darkness seize it. May it not be included among the days of the year. May that night be barren. May those who curse days curse that day. May its morning stars become dark. May this cursing language, which if you are a student of the Bible, you know this blessing and cursing language is important language because God reveals door that he used to enter into the world. A lot of commentators, when they read Job's words in chapter 3, they kind of freak out a little bit. They say, well, this is where Job, unfortunately, lost his faith. And this is the moment that he finally snapped. And you know what happens to the best of us? It happened to Job. He's a preacher. I don't think that's what happened. Not because I don't want that to be what happened, but because God is very explicit, if you read chapter 1 and chapter 2, that we're about to read a story about a man who faced severe suffering and did not lose his faith. But the whole point of the book of Job is that here's what happens to the godliest man in the face of the earth, that God tells Satan, no matter what you do to him, don't take his life, whatever else you do to him, he will continue to be faithful. God promises it in Job 1 and Job 2. And so Job 3 cannot be the story about when he does lose his faith, proving God was wrong in chapter 1. Someone who's trusting in the Lord somehow. And yet this person who's trusting in the Lord that curses the day God let him enter this world. And then one of the things that we can learn from the book of Job is that godly people go through dark seasons. They were going through a season where things are hard, where you're struggling, despairing of life. Some of our seasons are darker than others. There are times in our lives where some of us, as believers in Christ, we get to this point where we start talking like Job and thinking like Job and wondering and asking God those hard questions. Godly people ask hard questions, and Job asks hard questions to God as he reflects on his suffering. Two questions that I see Job asking God in this chapter are one, why did you let me enter this world? And two, God, why have you not taken me out of it yet? You know, in a sense, Job 3 kind of feels like the opposite of Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, God blesses the world and he creates the world and he calls it good, right? And in Job 3, Job is cursing the day of his birth, is calling it bad. And essentially, when you read through Genesis 1 through that lens, you start to see that some of the same things are happening in Genesis 1 that are happening in Genesis 3. In Genesis 1, God creates beautiful things, and at the end of each day, he says it is good. And says he creates the bird and he blesses them, and he says be fruitful and multiply and increase in number, and he says that it was good, right? And so the idea of God's creative energy is that when God creates, it's a good thing that happens that God declares is good and should result in more good things coming out of it, right? Good job, birds, become more birds. Good job, humankind, become fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth, more humans. This is great. I want more and more and more. Flourish and grow. Job says, no, not my birthday. My birthday was a bad day that no good ever came out of. And it should not be replicated. It should not reproduce. It should be squashed because all it did was bring darkness into the world. And so Job looks back at God and says, no, what? You're sovereign, right? You knew that this would happen. Why did you let me come into this place? But if this is my lot in life, if you just built me up just to tear me down, if you let me get to this place where no good is coming out of my life, everything that I thought would abide from me, my children, my business, my wealth, my anything, my health, anything, it's gone. It's like everything that you built up is dashed away. So then God, here's the question. Why? Why would you let me into the world if you're just going to let me leave with nothing? What's the point? Like if the sum total of my life is zero. Why couldn't you have let me just be stillborn to begin with? And at least go straight to the grave of this peace. Because all that I've experienced has only been terrible, and I'm still walking.
suicide prevention counseling, those types of things, is that as you're talking to someone about their desires for suicide, the one thing that you're looking for is, what is their plan? Do they have a plan in their life? How far along are they in thinking through these things? You know, you read through Job in chapter 3, it seems that he's desiring to die. He wants to leave this earth. He's wondering why he came in the first place. He's praying for death, and yet his plan for death is to ask God to give it to him. Right? He's not threatening to God, I'm going to take my own life here. He's not saying, well God, if you don't end it, I'm going to end it here. It's like Job is looking to God and desperately praying that God would finally let his life end on this planet. As I read this, I kind of picture Job like he was on this hot air balloon with God, and something floating through the air, enjoying life, right, looking over the landscape, and all of a sudden, God just like let him fall out of the hot air balloon. He's sort of like tumbling towards the ground below, and he grabs a rope or something. He's just hanging on for dear life. But he knows that the next thing that's going to happen is death, right? And first, Job looks up and says, God, save me! And then God just kind of like turns around and walks into the pool and goes, oh, what? So he's hanging there. He's getting colder, he's getting hungry, he's getting weaker, and he's just hanging there. He just feels like God has totally abandoned him, and he knows that death is imminent, and he keeps hanging there. And finally, Job in chapter 3 starts screaming up at the balloon and saying, God, what are you doing up there? God, if you want me to die, let me die. God, if that's your plan for me, just do it. God, I'm sick of holding on to this thing. Cut the rope. Throw the rope over the side, right? Shoot fire at me or something, God, because I'm just holding on here, and I hate this, and I don't want to be here anymore. And yet, God, I feel like all you care about is for me to end this and leave this planet. And so, God, let me leave this planet, cut this rope. And it's like he's screaming up to the balloon and saying, God, take out your knife, cut the rope, and let me fall to my grave. But the whole time he's holding on to this rope, and it seems like deep in Job's soul somewhere is this conviction that God is the only one who's allowed to make those types of decisions. And so he's just holding on, wishing he was dead, wishing he could fall to the ground below, but not being willing to do it himself, but just kind of screaming towards God, what are you doing? Why won't you kill me? The godliest man on the face of the earth. Society has become my daily food, where groans pour out like water, where fear has come upon me, where tragedy has happened to me. I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, but only trouble. This story, it's not a happy story. But there's something about Job that is beautiful and admirable, and I don't even know if he knows he has it. You know, I feel like if this was a made-up story, and this wasn't real life, and we're all kind of, we would be watching this movie and thinking, wait, if this guy wants to die so much, why is he just like on the rope? Right? But it's like Job has this faith deep inside of him that it's like not even an option. And he's just holding on to this thing, and he's still here today, praying to God, hating his life, despairing of life, wondering why he's here, wishing he was dead, all those kinds of things, just holding on to this thing. And yet, it seems like there's something in him that just won't let go. I don't know if that's something Job conjured up on his own. I don't know if it's something that Job created for himself. But I think one of the reasons that God shows us Job is shows us the strength of what faith can do, even in the most terribly difficult circumstances. I think a lot of times we read that Jesus talks about faith in the New Testament, and it seems like Jesus is trying to get us to be people of much faith, right? You know, he says things like, me and you of little faith. Oh, I wish I had more faith. But at the same time, when Jesus talks about faith, I notice that when he talks about the smallest amount of faith and how powerful it is. But we read a passage where he says, you know, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can tell a mountain and throw it into the sea, right? Like, oh, I wish I had that much faith. Right? But what he said is, if you have faith like a mustard seed, Right? Like he says in another place, the smallest of all seeds, right? You're starting to think of the smallest thing that you can imagine, right? Says, if you have faith the size of like a bacterium, right? If you have faith the size of a cell, if you have faith the size of an atom, you can do amazing things, which the lesson in that is not that you need a bunch of it. The lesson of that in that is that faith is a powerful thing. But if you have a tiny bit of it, amazing things can happen. It's not about how much faith you have, Jesus says. It's a thing. What do you think of Jesus who talks to the man? Jesus says, that all things are possible for those who believe. And the man is like, cut to the heart. He's like, I don't think I have enough faith. Right? So he prays to Jesus. All he can pray is, I believe, help my unbelief. Right? Like a cop-out prayer. But Jesus is trying to show him that the tiniest amount of faith is enough. But Joe is a man who everything is cut from him. His family is cut. Everything is cut. Everything. His health, his wife. The last thing he heard before he went silent for 7 days was his wife saying, curse God and die. But Joe was a man of faith. Trying to take your own life, that you wish you could take your own life, that you walked through all of this and more, and yet you're here today and you're wondering, well, what does that mean for me? I think one of the things that we learn as we look at this passage is that if you're here today, God is sustaining you somehow, even when you didn't want to sustain yourself. And as Job cries out to God, he says, God, why would you let me live? God, please just let me die. Sinners in the hands of an angry God by this man Jonathan Edwards. And he describes humankind almost like because of our sin. He says we're so small compared to God, and we're like this little spider that got grabbed off of like a, you know, picture of spider comes down. Like God just grabbed us and like held us above this fire that's raging, and if God would just let go, we would perish immediately, right? It was like, oh no, I'm so terrible, God's so big, and I'm so sinful, you should kill me. The guy that never turns the corner and says, you know, the only reason you're alive is because God will not let go of you. And that string that's holding you is strong enough to keep you. And God's hand is keeping you alive because his grace has binds you to that. But sometimes when we think that God is trying to kill us, experience your Christian friends doing those things to you, right? They do that to him. And finally, at the end, God shows up. I don't want to ruin it. But finally, at the end, God shows up and speaks. And he humbles Job. And he silences the friends and kicks them out and restores Job to health. And Job perseveres. It's not a fun story. But it's an inspirational story. It inspires us in a lot of ways. It inspires us to have empathy for those who are suffering. Somebody who's going through a time like this, or went through a time like this, or goes through seasons of times like this, and it's easy to not understand what it feels like to be them in those moments. And yet, as we read this, and we see a godly person saying the same things that our friend or our sister or whoever it is says when they go through those seasons, it can create this empathy in us that, okay, maybe I need to understand that this is harder than I imagined. That can inspire us. Job hanging from the hot air balloon on that rope with his grip strength. And one of the things that inspires me as I read through this is thinking that I know that it doesn't take much faith to persevere, but if I go through a season like this, I hope I have enough faith to persevere. Like if I was hanging from a rope, like physically, I'd probably have like 10 seconds before I die. My body is not strong. I'm a weak person. Just imagine, okay, if I fell off a cliff and I grabbed a branch, right? I'm going to die when I let go, right? And in that moment, there's no time to, like, go do some push-ups and come back, right? You get me hanging there and think, oh, I shouldn't have eaten that cheeseburger for lunch, right? It's whatever, right? At that moment, all you have to keep you alive is the grace of God and the strength that you've cultivated up to that moment, right? And so I read the book of Job, and I think, man, if I ever experience a season this deep and this dark, I hope that I have enough faith, whatever that means, to survive in that moment, which means that I should devote my life now to cultivating faith so that whatever amount it takes to get through something like this, I've got it. Because in those seasons, you can ask God for faith, and sometimes He'll give it to you. And man, it stinks when you see someone go through this season, and their faith is not strong, and they're just going to walk away from the Lord, and it gets harder than it needs to be, even though it's all they've got. Someday I'd be hanging from the side of the grid, can't give us a pain. I probably should go to push-ups now. The Bible's pretty clear that suffering is in all of our future. What does it mean to prepare for that moment, to strengthen our faith to get there? But you can't do calisthenics and push-ups to get stronger in faith. Faith, the Apostle Paul and everybody else says, is a gift from God. Faith, he should ask God. He should ask God. He gives generously to all without finding fault. Right? God's not going to condemn you if you say, God, I don't have faith, right? God's going to give it generously to you because he loves to reward those who seek him and ask for it. So even now, if you're going through a good time right now, ask God for faith to persevere the bad times that come. Right? If we can start to understand how suffering works with the Christian experience, we start understanding what people like James are saying when they say, that we should rejoice when we face various trials of many kinds because we know the testing of our faith develops perseverance. It's almost like James is saying, you know what? Yeah, I was going to say I'm doing all these micro, like, boot camps so you can get stronger because he knows what you're going to have to experience someday and he wants your muscle strength to be there when you have to hang from that bridge. So any season of suffering, if it's a small one, if it's a big one, I don't think you're actually going to rejoice when you get there. This is what God gives us to strengthen you. So if you're the one who we follow